I'm going to be presenting a class entitled The King of Knowledge. And this is essentially the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita as it is translated by His Holiness A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, our founder, and our Acharya. Acharya is somebody who leads by example. He is my personal guru and the founder of the Krishna consciousness movement. The Sanskrit name for this chapter is Rajaguhyam, which means the king of secrets. Everybody likes secrets. Everybody likes to find out secrets. We like to find out what's hidden behind things. Well, this is actually the king of all secrets. It's the best secret of them all. It's so secret that most people are not even, they haven't even copped on to it. They're not even interested in it. It's that secret, even though it's an open secret. So this chapter is a wonderful chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which was spoken by Krishna to his friend, his cousin, his brother-in-law, all the same person, and his who became his disciple, his de facto disciple, as he spoke the Bhagavad Gita just before a battle 5,000 years ago, when Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was on the planet. So let us begin. I'm just going to go as far as I can in the ninth chapter, and I'm going to pick and choose the verses. So the first verse is Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Idam te tu guhyatmam pravakshyam anusuyive. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha means Bhagavan speaks, God speaks. This is Krishna speaking to Arjuna. He says, the Supreme Lord said, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most secret wisdom, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. So let's break that down a little bit. The main point here is the reason I'm going to reveal this knowledge to you is anasuyave, because you are not envious of me. The key point, this is an extremely key point here. Most people are envious. People in the material world are envious of other people. Why does he have that? Why is she so good looking? How come this guy gets this break and I don't get that break? Etc. You may even discover at times that some of your friends are envious of you, much to your chagrin. We need to get to the point where we are envious toward no one, where we actually take joy and we feel happiness when a friend of ours achieves something or achieves some success, or when something happens, they fulfill a desire. But here, we're talking on a whole other level. People are envious of God. It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around that, but that's the factual reason for us all being down here in the material world to begin with, our enviousness of God. We'll cover that as we go. So, if you really want to hear this information, Krishna says, I'm only going to tell you because you're not envious of me, and you're going to accept what I say. Well, we'll find out if he does or not. So, here in the purport, Prabhupada points out, knowledge, and he says in parentheses, idam jnanam, quoting the verse, refers to pure devotional service, which consists of the nine different activities in devotion, in the bhakti yoga tradition, which is the tradition which we practice. And they are shravanam kirtanam vishnu, smaranam parasevanam, archanam vandanam dasyam, Sakyam Atma Nivedanam. So they are hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshiping, praying, obeying, maintaining friendship, and surrendering everything to God, to Krishna. To Krishna, in this case, or whatever concept of God that you may adhere to or that you may be attached to. It could be whatever incarnation or presentation that the Godhead takes. And he has hundreds of them. Not just one. He's God, after all. So, the theoretical knowledge is the hearing and the chanting. And finding out, reading some philosophy, and developing your relationship with Krishna by serving him and meditating on him and practicing bhakti yoga, the yoga of love and devotion. Then, from that jnana vijnanam, that's what he says here in the verse, theoretical knowledge is jnana and vijnana is realized knowledge. So by practicing these different methods of worshiping God, it leads to vijnana, which is realized knowledge. By the practice of these nine elements of devotional service, he says, one is elevated to spiritual consciousness, or Krishna consciousness, that is, realized knowledge. So you begin to have revelations, realizations, insights, inspirations, epiphany. Does it actually happen like that? It does. It actually happens like that. It just takes a little time, but it certainly does. Text 2. Raja vidya rajaguhyam pavitram idam uttamam pratyaksha vagamam dharmyam susukam kartam avyayam. So in text 2, the translation is, this knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of dharma. Dharma, duty, obligation, virtue, the path of right action, honesty, truth, purpose, and meaning. Dharma means all of these things, and also acting in harmony with your nature. We can also say religion or spirituality. Dharma means all of these things. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. Well, that verse is just ripe with meaning. So this is the king of education, Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, and the king of secrets. Why? Because this knowledge can tell you who you are really, as opposed to your thinking, I'm this body. And in this lifetime, I'm a man, and I was born in Canada, in my case. Or you're a woman, or you were born in India, or you were born in Timbuktu, or wherever you were born. And whomever you are, that is not your true and real and everlasting identity. That is a temporary identity that you've taken on according to your desire and your karmas. So here in the verse, he said, it's the most secret of all secrets, because it is. It is the purest knowledge because it gives direct perception of the self. Well, there we have it. Purest knowledge because it gives perception of the self. So I'm going to read a little bit from Baladev Vidya Bhushan, who is a very famous Vaishnava commentator, very insightful, I think. And he says here, karmas are stored in the subtle body. With the subtle body is the mind, the intelligence, and the ego. The gross body is the physical body made up of earth, water, fire, air, ether. And the subtle body, sukshma sharira, is made of mind, intelligence, and ego. He says, karmas are stored in the subtle body. With the disappearance of all karmas, when you don't generate any further karmas in your life, good reactions, bad reactions, and that in between. The subtle body, sukshma sharira, as well as the gross body, the stula sharira, will disappear. I've never heard it put like that before. And one will attain his spiritual body. This equals liberation from the wheel of repeated birth and death, samsara, reincarnation. So you'll know when you're there, because once your subtle body disappears, your physical body automatically disappears, and all of a sudden you're gone. Effectively, you're fully realized, you're in your soul body, and that is the state of complete realization. Pavitram idam uttamam, it is the most pure knowledge because it gives direct perception of the true self, the soul, the Atma. Then he goes on to say, Baladev, bhakti destroys all karmas, yields direct perception of God, is easy to execute. It is, actually. It's the easiest method of yoga of them all. And it continues after liberation. So then he juxtaposes, he compares the various branches of yoga that you can practice. Karma yoga is when you offer all your work, all your activities to God. That's a yoga. Anything that's done with God in mind is yoga. Don't forget, yoga means to link the soul with God. That's the meaning of yoga. It doesn't mean exercise. It doesn't mean weight loss. Sorry, that isn't it. That's the real meaning. So karma yoga, offering all actions to God, does not destroy all karmas until it turns to jnana, which means what? Jnana means knowledge. Until you get some realization from having practiced the karma yoga, then it becomes jnana. We develop the knowledge, and then it begins to destroy the karmas, the negative reactions, the sinful reactions, good or bad reactions. My friends, in case you don't know this, will cause you to come back into yet another lifetime, another body, another go-round. What we want is to wipe out, is to disappear all of the karmas, good, bad, and in the middle, and only then can we get off the wheel of repeated birth and death. He goes on. He says, Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga are not easy to execute and are abandoned upon achieving liberation. Jnana Yoga is the accumulation of knowledge. People who are more intellectual, more theoretical, more philosophical are typically Jnana Yogis or practitioners. And they realize these different things over time, the different principles and that are put forth in the yoga system. Ashtanga yoga, as you may or may not know, is the eightfold path, which is asana, the postures, pranayama, the breathing, dharana, dhyana, meditation, pratyahara, yama niyama, accepting things and rejecting things. That's that system, and it's very mechanical and it's very intense, and you got to keep at it. So when one becomes liberated through the practice of either Jnana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga, then you no longer practice these systems of yoga. They're done. You're finished with that, because you've already achieved the goal, which is complete realization. Then, karma yoga indirectly, this is Baladev, indirectly leads to the perception of Brahman. God is realized in three phases, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagawan. So energy, diversity, personality. So, karma yoga indirectly leads to the perception of Brahman, which is God as energy. And in that, on that level of realization, we tend to give up our own identity and merge into the oneness, which of course is a very popular system of yoga. Then jnana and ashtanga yogas directly lead to the perception of Brahman and Paramatma. So jnana also leads to the Brahman, the energetic perception, and ashtanga yoga, the yoga practice with the pranayama and the asanas, postures, leads to Paramatma realization, which is diversity. Paramatma is the super soul. Within the heart of all beings, we have Atma, the individual soul, and the Parama Atma, the super soul or supreme soul, God in the heart. So that system of yoga, yoga practice, leads to the perception of God in the heart. So that is Paramatma, but not Bhagawan. So Bhagawan, the perception of God as a personality, whereby you can enter into a reciprocal, loving relationship directly with God, just like you would with another person. And God as the person he is, that's Krishna. Only bhakti leads to that, or delivers that kind of realization, or that level of realization, which is Bhagavan realization. Okay, then we'll go on to chapter 9, verse 10. This is another big one. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanen nakaunteya jagadviparivartate. So Prabhupada's translation here is, this material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and unmoving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So he says here, Maya, by me, Adyakshena, under my direction, under my control, this prakriti, this material energy, this all this creation, the energy that makes this physical creation. You look at the cosmos, there are so many planets there, and there's life on millions of planets, my friends. In case you didn't know that, the Vedas tells us there's life on millions of planets. There are, in fact, 8,400,000 species distributed among the planets. 400,000 of them are humanoid or human-type species, which you will not find 400,000 human species on this planet, as you know. So then he says, suyate, it's coming into being or manifesting itself, sacharacharam, with the chara, with the moving, movable beings, beings that move, and the acharam, achara, beings that do not move. Hetunanena, for this reason or for this purpose, I'm creating this jagat. This jagat means the universe or universes. Viparivartate, again and again and again and again. There are many, many rounds of creation, many cycles of creation. You say, oh, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know. You could measure that. Well, there are. According to the Vedic system, there are many cycles, according to Vedanta, of creation. It's very simple. As we've talked about many times, as above, so below. The principle of as above, so below. That's how things work. So what is the principle? Well, here you have the seasons, right? So you have creation. Effectively, what is creation? This time of year, which we call spring. Things come into bloom, into blossom, and they spring to life. That's where they got the word spring from, by the way. And then they completely blossom in summertime. In fall, they begin to dwindle, to dissipate, to die off. The leaves fall off the trees, and the trees become barren, and the grass gets brown, not here in Ireland. In Ireland, it stays green all year round. That's why they call it the Emerald Isle. But in most places, it gets brown. So then what happens? We go into that state of dormancy called winter, where the whole thing is like... And that's what happens to the creation of the worlds as well. It all gets absorbed back into the body of God. That's how it's explained in Vedanta. And then it's recreated in the future again and again. And these are the cycles. So, why is it created again and again? Due to envy and lack of surrender by the conditioned souls. As Prabhupada, our founder, has explained to us, and as it is stated very clearly in many Vedic sutras and shlokas or verses, that the living beings are in this world because they became envious of God. They didn't like the fact that God was in charge and in the spiritual world, and everybody was serving him, and he was the center or the focal point. And they said, well, why is everybody serving him? I'd like to be the focal point. I'd like to be the center of my own universe. And God, being all merciful, as he always is, said, well, okay, that's fine. You can do that, but you can't do it here in the spiritual world, because this is my place. But I have a special place for you in the material world. You can go down there and you can, you know, orchestrate your kingship and your importance and become the center of your own universe. So that's why. That's why he keeps producing this again and again. Going back to Baladev Vidyabhushan, he has a commentary here. He says, being the doer and being neutral are not contradictory, because the Lord rules by his mere presence only. It's said that he glances upon Prakriti, the inanimate matter, and stirs her into creativity, which creates everything, all the worlds, all the universes. So it's not like he's busy having to do it, like it's work, quote unquote, for him. Well, I got a big job ahead of me today, he tells his wife. I got to go create the worlds. No, not like that for him. Here in our lives, in our world, if we want to make something happen, if we want to create something, if we want to set something into motion, we have to go out and do what? We have to go out and do it. We have to go out and put energy into it and make it happen, right? Krishna doesn't do it like that. No doing is required for him, just being and yearning or having that desire to put it into motion is what puts it into motion. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if you just get a thought in your head and then it manifests in front of you? No effort required. You can manifest it, and then you can unmanifest it and manifest something else. That's what he does with the entire creation. Baladev Vidyabhushan gives a wonderful example of how he does this. He says, it is just like fragrance, which causes agitation by being close to it. If you walk through a garden and you smell various flowers, they're just sitting there in their flower beds or on their trees or however they may be. And you go, oh, what's that beautiful smell? Is it a rose? Is it a magnolia? What is it? And it has an effect by doing what? By doing nothing. Just being. That's the example he gives. It's brilliant. Some of you know, some of you have had this experience where all of a sudden there's this beautiful smell, a beautiful fragrance that just appears. And you didn't light any incense. You haven't gone outside or wherever you may be. I mean, we can't connect its source, correct? That is often indicated that the gods are present, or some manifestation of the gods, goddesses, is present, because you can't see the source, particularly if it's rose or musk or sandalwood. So it can work like that too. It's doing without doing. That's really the concept here, right? For example, suppose you're in court. Any of you have gone to court because you have to appear in front of the judge because you're up for something. You were up to something. Or you're a witness in court, or you're a member of the jury, or you're accompanying a family member, whatever it might be. Before the court starts, people are filing into court. They're taking seats. You can see the attorneys. You can see the court clerk, the court reporter, in some cases, the one that takes all the notes. You'll see what you see. And all that's just fine. But then you get an announcement from the bailiff. All rise. Everybody rises. Now, this is serious. In walks the judge. And he says, His Honor, Her Honor, such and such. States the judge's name. Judge sits down. Now we're in business. Just by virtue, the appearance of the judge changes the whole atmosphere of the court, does it not? Yeah, it does. If you're working for a big company, and there's hundreds of people that work for that company, and you're sitting at your desk doing what you're, maybe not what you're supposed to be doing, maybe you're spacing out, maybe you're busy on your phone texting, and all of a sudden somebody says, "Oh, there's Mr. Sullivan," and the CEO has just walked into the room, into your, of all your cubicles of offices, and everybody's, "Oh, there he is. Oh, that's him. Yo, now we're busy working right away, aren't we? What did he do? He didn't do anything. He just appeared." You see? Same idea. I remember we used to, Prabhupada would appear for the morning program. He would come in for the greeting of the deity, around about 7 o'clock, 7, 7.30, depending where you were. They play the Govindam prayers, naturally, as they always do. And you'd hear the Govindam prayers playing, and then Prabhupada, this was in Los Angeles, because I spent most of my time there, and from the side entrance, not the main entrance, this was the entrance attached to his quarters upstairs, in would appear Prabhupada. Well, the energy, huge, huge impact, just his appearance. Now, the man was not big. You know, he must have been like 5'1" or 5'2". He wasn't that big a man at all. But his energy was so massive. And he would appear and we'd all... You could feel it. I mean, you could cut the air with the potency of his energy. It's wonderful. And then it got exciting. You know, you could feel the energy in the air. And then, of course, he'd be going to speak too, which was, for me, was the bonus. It was the best bonus. Anyway, so same idea. Doing something by doing nothing. Great concept. Krishna reminds Arjuna, as he's explaining all this in the 10th chapter, he says, Atava bahunaitena kim gyatena tavarjuna vishtabhyam idang kritsnam ikangshena stato jagat. Which means, but what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. with a single fragment of myself. What can you do with a single fragment of yourself? Scratch your face if it's itchy. There's not much you can do with a single fragment. God pervades and supports the entire universe. I find that quite impressive. Let's go to chapter 9, text 11, the very next verse. This is a very important one. Very important. The verses in this chapter are outstanding. They reveal the secrets. Don't forget that. Avajanantimang mudha manushim tanum ashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. And Prabhupada translates it as, fools deride me when I descend in human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. Who's that guy over there? Oh, that's that Krishna, you know, that he, the prince. He lives, let's see, on the west coast, Dwarka, I think. Oh, yeah. That's him, huh? A lot of people looked at Krishna like that when he was here 5,000 years ago. Just another guy. He's a prince, he's got good karma. You know, he's successful, he's powerful, he's wealthy, he has his own kingdom, etc., etc. But that's about it. Prabhupada has pointed out, and I've mentioned this to you in the past, that only a few hundred people, there were millions of people around back then, as there are now, and among those people, only a few hundred people actually knew that Krishna was God. Knew that he was God and accepted that he was God. Only a few hundred. What seems like a lot, but not in the grand scheme of things. So he'd be surrounded by people who would just think, who's that guy? So, interestingly, Baladev Vidya Bhushan, this is his translation. Also very good. He says, fools deride me, the Lord of all beings, the Lord of Mama Bhuta Maheshwaram, which means literally the Lord of all beings, when I appear in this eternal human form. This form of his is eternal. Manushim Tanam Ashritam, he takes shelter of the Ashritam, means to take shelter or to appear in the tanum, the body, the form, manushim, which is human-like form. And Baladev goes on, he says, not knowing that it is my original spiritual form. Pure Brahman, higher than all else. So, param bhavam ajananto. Ajananto means those who do not know or who do not realize. They avajananti, they deride, they make fun. And they crack jokes. That guy, give me a break. Like this. Higher than all else. Param bhavam. Ajananto means they don't know, they don't understand that this is my param bhavam, my supreme form, higher than all else. So that personal form he's pointing out here is the highest form. People think God wouldn't appear in a human form. God's way beyond that. He wouldn't do this. If he did this, it wouldn't really be God. He'd just be, I don't know, be faking it or something. God is just beyond anything that we are. Anything we are, God must be the direct opposite. Well, he is the direct opposite, as they think. And at the same time, he's the same. He's both. He can be energy. He can be diversity in all forms, appearing in every form, including all the animals and insects and birds and and crocodiles and whatever else. And all these human forms. See, he can be all of it. He is all of it. So, now, Prabhupada points out in the purport of that verse, when Krishna appeared before his father and mother, Vasudeva and Devaki, when he took birth in the prison cell, where he was born, on about midnight, he appeared with four hands. He appeared in his four-armed form. He typically appears in a four-armed form, in his Vishnu form, or in his two-armed form as Krishna. His four-armed form as Vishnu is the Aishwarya form, the power and potency and presence of God, that formal appearance that strikes awe and fear, or we become dumbfounded by God in this form. We can be. Not that he's fearful, because Vishnu is not fearful. It's not his thing. That's more the Old Testament of the Bible form. Hellfire and brimstone. But even for that, for Vasudeva and Devaki, was too much. It was too much for them to take in. It was too much for them to process, his parents. He prayed to him and said, please, please just appear in your form as a child, as our child, please. And they solicited him to do that because it was a little intense, you know. He's coming in with his Shankha Chakra Gada Padma. So then he transformed himself into an ordinary child, without all the accoutrements that Vishnu has when he appears. And then further on in the purport, Prabhupada says this. Jiva Goswami, commenting on this verse, says that Krishna, in his plenary expansion as the Paramatma, Super Soul, is situated in the moving and non-moving entities as the Super Soul, so that any neophyte or beginning devotee who simply gives his attention to the Archamurti, to the deity in the temple, the form of the Supreme Lord in the temple, and does not respect other living entities, is uselessly worshipping the form of the Lord in the temple. There are three kinds of devotees of the Lord. And the neophyte, or the beginner, is in the lowest stage. The neophyte devotee gives more attention and respect to the deity in the temple than to other devotees. So Jiva Goswami warns that this sort of mentality should be corrected. A devotee should see that Krishna is present in everyone's heart as the Paramatma, as the Super Soul. Therefore, everybody is the embodiment or the temple of the Supreme Lord. You know, sometimes people make a joke, my body is a temple. I don't eat that. My body is a temple. You've heard people say that. Well, in truth, your body is a temple, more so than you realize. Therefore, everybody is the embodiment or the temple of the Supreme Lord. And as such, as one offers respect to the temple of the Lord, he should similarly properly respect each and everybody in whom the Paramatma dwells. Well, in whom does the Paramatma dwell? In everybody, including the animals, all of them. He concludes here, he says, everyone should therefore be given proper respect and should not be neglected. Wow. Big lesson there, my friends. We must treat everyone with tremendous respect and kindness and courtesy and politeness. Very, very important. We must always do that, and not to think that we're better than others, or if you have some spiritual realization and Krishna has blessed you with that, that's wonderful if you have it. But the closer you get to Krishna, the more realization you have of your own, it should turn into greater and greater humility. And no, you're not better than anybody else. You're not superior to anybody else. You just see things differently. And subsequently, because you do, you're more respectful. And even when people are disrespectful to you or mean to you, you are still respectful. That's the idea. Okay. The very next verse, 9:12. Mogasha mogakarmano mogajnana vichetasaha rakshasim asurin chaiva prakriting mohining shrita. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. Wow. What is that about? Well, demonic and atheistic views. Well, everybody has views, and there are many views that are shared. If you can't seem to find them, just get onto social media. Every view under the sky is available to take a look at. Every opinion, every attitude, every perception, every misperception, every bad attitude, every useless opinion, and everything in between is available on social media, as we all know. God bless them all. So if you're attracted to demonic or atheistic views, what is the perception there? Well, first of all, atheistic is those who don't believe in God. You got theists and atheists. We're theists. Well, most of us who are here, we're theists. We believe in God, or we believe in some manifestation of God, or we believe there's a higher power, or different people explain it a different way. I know there's a creator. I just don't know what it is. I talk to people all the time, and I ask them if they're spiritual, and those are the kinds of things they say to me, according to their perception. But they believe in God. They just don't know what or who He is. If you're attracted to atheistic views, then that means your intelligence has been bewildered. Moghasha. That's what it means, moga. Bewildered or confused or stolen. And then demonic views is, again, it's back to envy. God, yeah, well, He's no better than me. I'm just as good as He is. I'm just as valuable, as important as that guy. That's a demonic view. And that is produced and sustained out of ego. Or Prabhupada likes to call it false ego. Ahankara. Ahamkara. I am the doer. False ego. Self-importance. Inflated ego. I'm better than you. I'm better than him. I know more than that one. I'm better than that person. My car is nicer than that person's. Whatever. However you've deemed yourself superior. That is ego. And when it comes to God, it's a demonic mentality. Because there's no acceptance, there's no surrender, there's not even congeniality. So, Prabhupada says in the purport, There are many devotees who assume themselves to be in Krishna consciousness in devotional service, bhakti yoga. But at heart, they do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna as the absolute truth. For them, the fruit of devotional service, going back to Godhead, will never be tasted, or will never be tasted in this life if you have that mentality and it continues. Similarly, those who engage in fruitive or pious activities and who are ultimately hoping to be liberated from this material entanglement will never be successful either, because they deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. They deride him and make fun of him. Oh, that guy's not God. Yet, Prabhupada points out, and has done so numerous times, there are so many commentaries written on the Bhagavad Gita by people who think exactly that, that this Krishna, who is he? He's just a literary device. He's just a made-up character. It's not him that you surrender to. It's not him who's speaking. It's, you have to surrender to the energy behind that. So, well, they wouldn't even say surrender to. See, people who do not really understand what and who God is will not come to the realization that what you do when you're actually in God consciousness is you surrender yourself. And surrender what? One thing and one thing only: your ego, your self-importance, your self-indulgence, your narcissism, if you will, in that respect. And people don't want to do that. I'm not going to let go. I think I'm right. That's the attitude. So those kinds of persons will deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. In other words, persons who mock Krishna are to be understood to be demoniac or atheistic. You can come to Krishna consciousness and be attracted to it for various reasons. It's very attractive. There are many elements of it that are very, very attractive. I always thought so. You may not have the full revelation or realization of what it is and what Krishna is. You have to actually put bhakti yoga into practice and practice it with some faith and sincerity for a period of time before you might step into the belief that, oh, Krishna is God, because I can see, I can feel, I am directly experiencing how he is reciprocating with me in my life. So for some of you, it will take time for this to develop. Is that a problem? No, it's not a problem. But if you have an adamant belief that this guy Krishna is not God, he's just delivering this spiritual message, then as Prabhupada points out, you're not going to become a liberated soul if you deny that. Me, I'm a fortunate soul because I've been close to God since I was a child. And I think I've told this story on a few occasions when I was about 19 or 20, I don't recall now. I went to a friend's house. We were going out in the midst of winter. We were going out to do something in the snow, actually. Some skiing or something or other we were doing. And as we waited for him in his sitting room, his living room, he had this book on the table, on the coffee table, and I picked it up and it said, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna book. One of the volumes, the big silver one, you know. I picked it up and then, what is this? So I opened it up. I read one paragraph, just opened it randomly, read one paragraph. And then he came up from the bedroom and says, okay, I'm ready to go now, guys, let's go. And then I closed the book, put it down. I looked at it again. I said, oh, that's God. That was it. And I never doubted it since. And I still hadn't really come to understand. I hadn't done any serious investigating. I hadn't even read the Bhagavad Gita at that point in time. But, yeah, my faith is there, and it never shifted. It only gets stronger. You need to develop that over time. If you haven't yet, keep practicing bhakti yoga. That's all. Verse 13. Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakritim ashrita bhajantya nanya manaso gyatva bhutaram avyayam. Beautiful verse. Beautiful verse. And what does he say here? O son of Pratha, Arjuna, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the supreme personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Wow. Daivim prakritim ashrita. They have ashrita. They have taken shelter of or under the protection of the daivi prakriti, the internal energy of God, also known as the para prakriti, the supreme spiritual energy of the Godhead, as opposed to the internal, as opposed to the external energy, the upara prakriti, or, well, the mundane, really, the mundane energy, this world. This is the external energy. Everybody is under the influence here when we are covered over as conditioned souls, and we do not know our true, eternal, spiritual nature as souls, part and parcel of God, and eternal servants of God. When we are not in awareness of that, when we do not have that realization, then we are under the control of this external energy, right? Which means what? We're subject to birth, death, old age, disease, suffering. You know? And everybody here, as I've said many times, is on death row. We're all on death row. We just don't know when our sentence is up and we're gone. That means you're under the control of the external energy. So he says that the Mahatmas, the great souls, are under the protection of the internal energy. This is you. This is us who have this faith and belief and understanding and realization. Baladev Vidya Bhushan, he translates the great souls as those with profound minds. Those who have minds that can comprehend this kind of subject matter, which is Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam, which is the king of knowledge, the king of secrets, Pavitram Uttamam, the supreme pure. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know that I'm the supreme personality of Godhead. So, Bhutam Avyayam. Bhutadim, he says here, which means another meaning for that is the origin of all creation or the origin of all created beings. Avyayam, inexhaustible, indestructible, eternal. That's who God is. That's who Krishna is. And those who have that perception and that knowledge, what do they do? I guess we're going to conclude with this verse, which is verse 14, chapter 9. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha dredavrata namasyantash chamam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Their faith is fixed. Their shraddha is fixed. Shraddha stitta, fixed faith. And it's also explained here as dridha vrata, fixed in vow or fixed in faith. Who are they? Those are the Mahatmas. That's what they do. That's what we do, what we need to do if we're not doing it. In fact, I think I'm just going to jump to the one more verse because I thought about this a lot. I looked at this for a few days. It's text 30. I'll conclude with this one. Api che sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadur eva samantavya sangyagvya vasito hisaha. Translation: even if one commits the most abominable actions, if he is engaged in devotional service, if he is regularly engaged in the practice of yoga, offering love and devotion to God, he is considered to be saintly because he is properly situated. So, Ananya Bhak means one who worships me without deviation. Why is this important? You will say, yeah, but you know, I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. I'm embarrassed, but I did this last week or did this last night, and I know I shouldn't have, but I couldn't help myself. There was this situation that happened, and I sort of fell into my old ways. My friends, Krishna knows that. It happens to all of us. Okay? Don't be so hard on yourself. He says, most abominable actions. Baladev Vidyabhushan, he translates that part a little bit different. He says, even if you're the most sinful person on the planet, if you constantly worship Krishna and take shelter of Krishna and give yourself to Krishna and offer everything to Krishna, you know, a leaf, a flower, fruit, water, simple things, whatever you have, everything you do, everything you eat, everything you offer and give, you give to him. It will purify you over time. It's to be understood that you are a conditioned soul, conditioned by material energy, the external energy, for what? Thousands of lifetimes. And now you're endeavoring sincerely to get off the wheel of repeated birth and death, and you keep slipping up. You fall down, you make a fool of yourself, or you feel badly. And who criticizes you more than you? Tell me. Who is your greatest critic? Yeah, I know some of you are going to say, well, my mother, actually. Okay, well, that may be so. But no one makes us feel worse than we make ourselves feel when we fall down or we deviate from the path. You're a human. You're still affected by the material energy. Krishna says, this person should still be considered sadhu. Sadhur eva mantavya. Mantavya, to be considered as a sadhu. As a saintly person. Because they're endeavoring. And they're endeavoring consistently. And they're on the path. And they've stayed on the path even when they fall down. Be kind to yourselves, my friends. Be loving. This is the path of bhakti yoga, the yoga of love and devotion to God, which includes what? Which includes all living beings, all people from different cultures and backgrounds and colors and stripes, and countries, all animals, and what? Not you? We don't include you? You're included too. So, in the process of learning how to love, you have to be included in that as well. So, thank you. Thank you for your kind attention and for your participation in this live stream event. I do prefer seeing you people face to face, but this is nice too. And I hope this has been of value to you, and may Krishna bless you always. Hare Krishna.